You're about to get stuck into another edition of the GP Fans Stewards Room podcast, breaking down all of the action from a racing weekend in the world of Formula One. And if you like what you hear and what you see, you can rate, review and subscribe to the podcast on all good podcasting outlets, including Spotify, Anchor.fm, our host, and iTunes as well. And if you're watching on YouTube, you can hit the subscribe button down below to stay up to date with all of our content there. And if you like the musings of Ewan Gale, Sam Hall or Ian Parks, follow Twitter or Instagram at GPFansGlobal to stay up to date with all of the breaking news in the world of Formula One, or even just get on the website, gpfans.com. But now, let's get into the show.
As soon as I put my foot on it, I was like Bambi on ice.
Welcome back to the GP Fans Stewards Room podcast, breaking down all the racing action from a weekend in the world of Formula One. Myself, Ollie Wilson, Ewan Gale, Ian Parks and Sam Hall running through what was the Singapore Grand Prix as the race finally returned to the calendar for 2022. And as an entertainment spectacle, I think it's safe to say that we weren't let down on and off track this weekend. Now, Ewan, you're actually out in Singapore at the moment. I do not need to get into your circadian rhythm right now and the times and hours that you've been working for GP Fans, but I will say it's greatly appreciated. And also, I want to know, what is it like in Singapore with the return of Formula One over the last few days?
It's an incredible spectacle. It's very wet this week, is what it was. Never seen rain
like
it.
We noticed that.
Yeah, never seen rain like it. And I mean, I'm from South Wales, so it's a big, big shock to see worse rain than I get back home. But really, really good. You can see the buzz around the place. And you can see the buzz between the teams and the drivers as well, and what the event means to F1 when you're in the paddock. You can really see the love for the event.
I mean, this is one for everybody, I suppose. Does it feel like a race that we have been missing over the last few years, or has it slotted in and everybody kind of feels, yep, that's another one to the list? Is there a certain special nature about the night race in Singapore?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think, I'm not sure it was so missed when it wasn't here, but when it's come back and you see the buzz that it creates, I think you realise how much of a hole was left by it. And I think because it was the original night race, I don't think the other night races of Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, for example, I don't think they are anywhere near as special as this one is. It feels different for some reason. For some reason, the cars look better. I think the rain might have helped with a bit of the shine as well. But yeah, there's something about it. I'm not really sure how to explain it really, but there is something about it that makes it stand out as probably absolutely do not lose from the F1 calendar now.
I mean, it's a glorious spectacle. The city looks incredible under the lights, of course. It does without the F1 circuit being there. And then obviously you have the track lit up over the weekend. It always looks fantastic. Ian, Sam, it was an incredible weekend as well in terms of what we actually got on track. And talking about the rain, does that play a bigger part in these night races? We heard Fernando Alonso saying earlier in the race that it was difficult, and we'll get on, of course, to actually who won it and the incredible drive from Sergio Perez, but it was difficult to see a dry line for Alonso and his team from the pit wall because you get that reflection a bit off the track from the lights anyway and the intensity. It really does throw a spanner into the works, you feel, for the drivers.
No, yeah, it's... I think the rain did help. I think, sort of, obviously, we've never had a properly wet race, a whole wet race in Singapore. And I think you can say, even though they got on slicks, this was a whole wet race. The track was never entirely dry. There was always that sort of risk involved. And I actually think, I don't know what the other guy is saying, I think the first half of the race wasn't actually that good, really. It was sort of, you had to appreciate the skill, obviously, but it was one of those where a lot of things happened, but you were sort of questioning, is this a good race? The second half, however, absolutely incredible. But I would agree with what Ewan said. It's almost a modern classic, this one, isn't it? Now, you wouldn't imagine a calendar without it.
I saw Ewan's face then when you said that comment. Sammy wasn't happy with that at all.
We may have had this debate on WhatsApp during the race.
We did,
because at the halfway stage, I turned around and said, well, we've had some incidents, but it's not really that great a race. Yeah, in fairness, we had a couple of overtakes at the very start off the line. We had Checo getting past Charles. We had Carlos getting past Lewis and it obviously holding him up, going slow for whatever reason. We had Max trying to do his damnedest coming from eighth on the grid. But we had those retirements, and up until that, the race had really settled into almost a routine. But there was always that anticipation of any second now, there could be a VSC, any second now, there could be a safety car. But you always get that with Singapore. You always know that that's going to be around the corner, for want of a better phrase. And that's eventually how it turned out. As I say, the first half for me, I just felt like that real oomph that you normally get with the Singapore Grand Prix. And then, as Sam said, over the second half, then it completely changed, because once we went that from that wet to dry scenario, when are the drivers? Who's going to blink first? And obviously, Mercedes and George Russell did and made the biggest mistake probably of the season so far. But once that happened, then that's when the race really started to evolve, and that's when it became more exciting, so more of a spectacle. But overall, great event. And as the guys have pointed out, this is one of those must-haves, because it's the original night race. It carries with it that, not only that spectacle of being in the centre of Singapore, Far East location, the Singapore flyer, the track lit up with the flyaway, the darkened flyaways going over it, adding to that mystique and that aura, but it's just such a great event overall, not just off track but on it. The whole combination of it just makes it a superb event that has to be on the F1 calendar going forward.
Is that another title that Ferrari have lost, the biggest mistake from a pit lane this season? I mean, they can't win anything this year. We won't give them any credit at all at this point. Let's talk about the actual race, the action on track. Let's start with Mercedes, because at one point, Ewan, it looked like this was perhaps, just perhaps, going to be their weekend to maybe get a victory. Lewis Hamilton in qualifying seemed like he was going to go toe-to-toe with Charles Leclerc for pole at one point, and then the race, nothing happened. Andrew Shovlin's already said, and as we've reported on GPFans.com, that it was a race that, you know, they kind of want to forget. Nothing really clicked in and went right for them at all, both with George and with Lewis, with the mistake he had losing his front wing. Is this an opportunity lost for Mercedes, perhaps, to have possibly found a first race win of the season?
I think it was at least a podium gone begging. Potentially a race win. The biggest problem they've had all season, other than the bouncing, of course, has been switching the tyres on, and the rain before the race really put any ideas of winning at rest, I think. Obviously, they went new inters on Lewis's car. He wanted scrubs because he said that the scrubs felt better on the laps to the grid. Had a slow start, got pushed wide by Sainz, or went wide with Sainz up his inside, whichever way you want to put it. And Sainz didn't have the pace to keep up with the front two, and that just meant that Lewis got frustrated, and eventually went into the wall. Uncharacteristic from Hamilton, but that's sort of the desperation that Mercedes are in at the moment. With Russell, with George, it's just one of them things. They had the issue in qualifying that left him 11th, and it was always going to be, especially in those conditions, he was always going to be a guinea pig, really, for Hamilton, especially where Hamilton was. So, no, it was a gamble. It didn't work, but, you know, they had to try something. It was, if anything could go wrong, it did go wrong, and it's just typical that it was at the race that actually everything seemed to start to come together.
You mentioned the mistake. It's completely uncharacteristic of Hamilton, but it's also a track where you have to be bold and be brave. And George Russell has come out and said, you know, if you're going to overtake at Singapore, you have to kind of make perhaps these wild lunges. You know, he was dicing with Mick Schumacher as well, and he's actually called for reform of the track to make overtaking better because of the new cars as well that come with it. That fair assessment, in fact, on the Singapore circuit at this point? Sam is not a happy man about that idea.
You can't change every track just to suit the cars, because, yes, this is one of those cases where F1 is pretty much the only championship that races there, so nothing else other than the Sport Series race there. But you can't go, oh, we can't overtake here, so we've got to change things. Every time you've got, we saw once they used DRS, once that was enabled, and that's another thing. I thought that was way too late that it was enabled. But once it was enabled, you had some overtaking. Yes, it's artificially induced, but it's still overtaking. And the challenge was there, so it wasn't even too powerful. But I think with Mercedes this weekend, it was really the first weekend I can remember this year that they've actually made mistakes. The team made mistakes, the drivers made mistakes, and it was just a bit messy. It was uncharacteristically messy for Mercedes. We've not seen it this year, or I'm trying to remember, probably Germany when they had the special livery. Was that 2018? That's the last time that I can remember Mercedes making so many mistakes across the team.
Yeah, it was unusual to see. Just one of those weekends. Every team has it, to be fair. Yeah. I mean, even Red Bull. Let's look at Red Bull. That, in a nutshell, that was their worst weekend, apart from Checo winning, of course. Apart from, if you look at what happened with Max, that was their worst weekend. The big mistake in qualifying with Max, not putting enough fuel in the car. They had five laps and he went for a sixth. He was going to be on course for pole position, comfortably up on Charles Leclerc, and then all of a sudden they had to call him in. He went ballistic, turned the air blue. Kind of ironically, at the end of it, turned around and said, well, they make mistakes, we make mistakes, and guess what? Max made mistakes in the race. Went into anti-stall, off the grid, went from 8th to 12th by the end of the first lap, and as with Lewis, with his nudge into a barrier, Max then lunged down the inside of McLaren's Lando Norris, completely made a misjudgment on that, had to take to the escape road, and that cost him places as well. So, as I say, apart from a brilliant drive from Checo, that absolutely saved the weekend for Red Bull, because otherwise that would probably have been their worst weekend of the season. As I say, Max just didn't go right. First bite of the cherry at trying to win the title. Got to assume that he's going to do it the coming weekend in Japan, given the points advantage now and how many points are left. So just going to have to wait and see. But you can't imagine he's going to have back-to-back weekends that have been so poor.
I mean, it's the greatest spin in a runoff area that I've ever seen from an F1 driver. Verstappen made that look good at that point after he lunged on Norris and then was able to do a quick 180 and then come back onto the circuit. But with Red Bull, just going back to that qualifying session, and you mentioned the mistake from the team putting five laps of fuel in, but isn't that information that Verstappen gets? He knows that there's five laps of fuel in it at all? Or is that then a miscommunication from the team of not knowing, not setting up the driver, or perhaps they should have said that to Verstappen? Because he had mistakes on one of those qualifying laps as well, which is why he then had to go for that final lap. It just seems really surprising that information wouldn't be passed along to the driver.
It's a miscommunication, because he did abort that penultimate lap. I think he had Gasly coming up ahead of him as well in the AlphaTauri. As it turns out, I think that lap would have been good enough for pole anyway, which is, again, typical. But the team has the data. They should have known how much fuel was in that car, and they should have known that he wouldn't have had the fuel to get around another lap. And it's not that he was out of fuel, it's that he wouldn't have had the fuel to give the necessary fuel supply to the FIA as well. Obviously they have to do a fuel reading at the end of the session, so that's what happened. They had to tell him to box urgently in order for him to have that necessary limit.
They gambled, basically. They after aborting the penultimate lap, as you mentioned, they would, yes, have seen what the fuel situation was, but they couldn't call him in at the end of that penultimate lap because they wouldn't have got tyres on to then go round, etc., etc., to eventually get another lap in. There was no time. So they obviously allowed him to push again for that last lap, and they would have been judging it all the way throughout that lap. And Christian had mentioned that the call for him to come in was made two corners before he did, because they could obviously see the situation and where the fuel was at that point. So they just took a gamble on letting him go round again, and in the hope that there might have, he might have been able to cross the line just had enough to crawl back on the call down lap and then submit the sample. So the call was made, they had to make the call, but as I say, they just rolled the dice and see and let it play out to see what would happen.
It's worth pointing out as well that because of the track conditions, because the track was slower, the fuel consumption would have been down as well, so it wasn't as easy as just using all the fuel data they've got. The track was evolving all the time, and you know, it was a case that they would have had to have made that call as he was going around. So it was miscommunication, but it wasn't a howler like Max sort of made it out to be at the end.
I think he overplayed that. I really do.
Yeah.
I think it was wrong of him to go on the radio the way he did. And
especially after the season they've had.
Let fly. Yeah. Exactly.
He spent too much time with Yuki Tsunoda, clearly.
What about the other side of the Red Bull garage then? That is an incredible drive from Sergio Perez. And I want to talk to you guys specifically about the latter part of the race where Perez knows this 5-second penalty is coming and he has to then pull out a gap from Charles Leclerc, which was a fantastic effort from the Mexican driver to ensure that he did pull out enough of a gap that even with the penalty he was able to take the race victory. I mean, that level of performance to suddenly go up a gear at that moment shows that Sergio Perez perhaps can be that guy for Red Bull in the future.
I think it would have been incredibly harsh if he had have got 2 5-second penalties. I don't think it's possible really to argue against the one for dropping back more than 10 car lengths. I mean, the safety car was out of sight entirely, so it's a slam dunk. It was another Red Bull error there. But as you say, what a drive. I mean, he had Charles Leclerc within about 3/4 tenths of him for at least 5 laps. And then Leclerc makes 1 or 2 small errors, the only errors for Ferrari all this weekend, actually. And then he just falls out of DRS range and Perez goes, well, see you later, I'm out of here. It's possibly Perez's best drive to a victory in F1, although Sakir with Racing Point is a real strong contender as well. But
came from last in that race.
And he wasn't in a Red Bull.
Exactly.
But no, it was a solid drive, and Perez needs a lot more of this if he is to sort of remain as Max's teammate longer term, because he's not been good enough this year, but this is a sign of what he can do.
He needs to prove he can win on anything other than street circuits as well. So.
I mean, I think what helped him is that, again, the conditions, it sort of played into the car characteristics that he enjoys. A bit slidey on the front. Now, that's what he was enjoying in the Red Bull before it got updated at the start of the season. And it's exactly what he's there to do. He's there to pick up the pieces when Max falters. It's what he did in Baku when he won for Red Bull. It's what he did in Monaco. You know, it's exactly what Red Bull didn't have with Alex Albon and didn't have with Pierre Gasly. That's why he's on the contract he's on. So, as Sam said, you know, I wouldn't go as far to say he hasn't been good enough, because he's third in the standings and Red Bull are top of the title when Ferrari have got 2 drivers scoring decent points as well. But he does need to do it a bit more frequently and not on street circuits, as Ian said.
The bigger question that comes out of that, and I'm going to acknowledge it was a brilliant drive from Checo, controlled from the front, great overtake, great start and great pass going into the first corner. And then, as I say, just with those conditions, so much pressure, 3 VSCs, 2 safety cars, manages to withstand the charge from Charles behind him when the DRS was eventually activated as well, managed to pull out the gap, and that eventually allowed him to take the win despite the penalties. Why did we have to wait 2 hours nearly for that decision?
Yeah.
If it's categoric and the stewards have turned around and said in their report he broke the 10 car length rule, well, why do we have to wait for the driver to give his version of events? It's pretty obvious he's broken the 10 car length rule. If the stewards had to wait for a driver every single time to give his version of events, then every single penalty or every single incident would be judged post-race. But they judge some incidents during the race. They don't wait for a driver's opinion then. So why in this case did we have to wait for Checo to give his opinion as to why he twice broke the rule? And incidentally, they did apply things correctly. They issued the reprimand first time around, subsequently the 5-second penalty. But now, of course, they've set a precedent, because every time that happens, and Christian did make a point, and he was absolutely right in this, how many times have we seen that 10 car length breached during many previous races? Hundreds of times that's happened. But this time round, they've clamped down on it, and as I say, now they've set the precedent. So now we know that first time round is going to be a reprimand. If a driver does it again, as Checo did, 5-second penalty. But there was, in my mind, there was absolutely no need that they had to wait for Checo's perspective on why he breached twice the 10-car length rule.
And even the stewards' report was confusing as well, because they said something along the lines of Perez mentioned about the conditions playing a part, but we didn't accept that. And then they came out and said, but taking the conditions into account. I'm like, well, hang on. Well,
exactly.
Are you taking it into account, or are you not paying any attention to it? You know, make up your mind. So, yeah, it is what it is.
I do like that this season the rules are more or less being applied. If you've broken them, it's black or white. You've either broken them or you haven't broken them. And without straying into other topics, if you've broken them, you've broken them. If you haven't, you haven't. So
yeah, you've got to do it on every one, Sam. You can't just pick and choose.
No, exactly. So like Ian says, they've set the precedence here. They've got to now each time, and maybe he only got away with a reprimand for the first time because he redressed that very quickly. It wasn't like he was that distance away for a long time. It was, he was there, and then it was, he pulled the gap back. So I suspect if you dropped back and you remained that distance back, that's where you get the Michael Massey explanation of every incident is different.
And speaking of the FIA and decisions made, and I'm just going to take up Ollie's job here of hosting the show. Why did we have to wait 65 minutes for that race to eventually get underway? It meant that we completely skipped the full wet tyre scenario.
But we always do, Ian. Why are we surprised?
I know, but why?
The biggest waste of money in the world is an extreme wet tyre, because they never get used other than maybe two laps to the grid by each driver. Honestly, everything about finances in F1 at the moment, right? And we never use extreme wets, and they get thrown around the world. They're pointless. We never use them. There's no need to have Will.i.am on the grid or whatever. Get the mechanics, just roll the cars onto the grid. They don't need to do laps to the grid. Roll the cars onto the grid, get the mechanics to bolt a load of tyres on, put some fuel in, make sure everything's working, send them out behind the safety car for two laps, stick them on the grid and get the race underway. 20 minutes, done.
20, 30 minutes, that's exactly what Christian said. He said they could skip all of that and just be done in 30 minutes.
Ridiculous.
And we could have had a great start on full wets. That's when we like to see the drivers at their best in the most testing conditions. Then we go from full wets to inters, inters to dries, and it just makes the race an even more greater spectacle.
It's not even as though we can argue with the safety issue either, is it? Because you look at the barriers around the track, and you see Yuki, when he went into the barrier, buried his AlphaTauri into the barriers. That would never have happened in wet conditions because the speeds are so much lower. So yes, the chances of a crash are higher, but your speeds are lower, so you're in theory a lot safer in those cars, which are, for all intents and purposes, bulletproof anyway. So what is the concern here? I'd love the FIA to come and tell us either the point of these extreme wet tyres that we're never ever going to use, or why they won't let the drivers drive in the wet, because the danger is, yeah, you might crash, but you're going to crash in the dry at some point as well. So in junior categories, they race in the wet. There's no getting away from it. The other championships are the headline act, and you've got to race in your time slot, otherwise you miss it. You've got to race in the wet. F1 seems to be the only European-based, because I know Americans don't really race in the wet in any championship, but it's the only European-based championship that doesn't appear to bother racing in the wet. They don't want to.
Yeah, the problem with that, Sam, is that obviously the junior categories have far less downforce. They ride a lot higher than the F1 cars do, and the floor planks are completely different as well. So F1 cars turn into boats over standing water. But the extreme wet tyres are useless. They don't get enough heat in them. They're too hard, and no one wants to drive on them, which I think is part of the reason why we skip them. The other thing is, the track was so slippery. The track was more slippery than the painted area on the outside of the track. I went to walk on the track surface thinking that will be safer, I won't stack it, and as soon as I put my foot on it, I was like Bambi on ice. So, you know, there are factors into it, but it's just having had the delay, and the delay of course was right, it was atrocious conditions, but it didn't need 65 minutes and the whole pompous celebrities and the national anthem and getting everyone, look, great, happy days, everyone gets to see the cars up close, but there's no need for it all the time.
Isn't that what Formula One is though, the spectacle as well? Not only they want to have the spectacle of the celebrities on the grid walk, the pomp and ceremony of an anthem beforehand and everything like that, but also the spectacle of these cars being driven fast and a race that's got so much water on the track that it's near constant spray. There's an element perhaps of the visual spectacle is slightly lost as well, that some people want to be able to see these cars going as quickly as possible. I mean, it all just bleeds in surely to what we've talked about Formula One is evolving and changing to try and be more entertaining for the new supporters as well. Ian is not a happy man about this.
We get to see that every Grand Prix Sunday. You know, it's nothing new, seeing celebrities on the track, having a national anthem. Yeah, okay, they could play the national anthem, obviously, to respect the country that they're in. You know, make the 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever, to ensure that happens. But we don't need to go through everything, the whole procedure that we had that went before the Singapore Grand Prix, when given the circumstances that took place on Sunday. We don't need to have all that. Yes, I get it, it's a part of the show, but we see it every other Sunday, other Grand Prix Sunday. This was one of those cases where circumstances should have dictated, right, we're going to do this instead. We're going to shorten the whole procedure down to 30, 35 minutes. We'll make space for the national anthem to respect the country that we're in, as I say, but we're going to condense everything to get the race underway. Yeah. That's what they should have done in this instance.
But let's get real. It's the people on the grid, other than sort of if you're lucky enough to get a pass, as Ewan managed to get a pass. I mean, let's say less about that. But it's stakeholders. It's people who have put a lot of money into the championship. So it comes back to money again. If you don't want to have to refund these people who have paid the real top dollar tickets for this experience, to be able to be on the grid to do this, that and the other, you don't want to have to end up refunding the money and losing some money. I'm totally with what the other guys have said. It should have been cut down. We should have just had the anthem go. Arguably, you could even skip the anthem. You could just go. But it's... F1 doesn't want to create a storm with its highest paying visitors, its customers. It just doesn't, and this would have risked that potentially.
In which case, you write on their ticket or their pass, due to circumstances, your session on the grid might not take place.
Yeah, very sorry.
Forewarned. Tough, there we go.
But we can't make it stop raining. It's just how it is. And the same goes for fans wanting to see the cars in the dry going the fastest, you know. In the end, it rains, it happens, and there's a 3-hour time slot, and you've got to get it going as fast as you can. Especially when you know this circuit in particular tends to make races go to a 2-hour limit, as it did yesterday.
Even better, you just offer them umbrellas and say it's raining on the grid, go.
Yeah, but how's Martin Brundle going to be able to recognise people under an umbrella if he can't do it when he's walking down a grid when it's bright and sunny in Miami? Sorry, Martin, we don't need to bring that up again, but that was not Patrick Mahomes. Let's talk a little bit, let's talk as much as we can, I guess, about the hoopla that's going... Actually, sorry, no, let's go for Max Verstappen going to Japan this week and can wrap up the title, which is what Red Bull wants anyway, to win it in Japan kind of for Honda again, right? I mean, this... kind of plays into their hands. A race victory and the fastest lap, and it doesn't matter what Charles Leclerc does, Max Verstappen is the two-time world champion. It's kind of the scenario that they were dreaming for.
They scripted it well, didn't they?
I mean, they made...
Don't forget Checo. Checo can still win it.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah, whatever.
Not in Japan. That's the difference. He can't win it in Japan. That's you've got to please Honda
it's
at the end.
It's such a Red Bull track and it's such a Max track, and it is big, 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 big braveness. Fast corners, narrow track, sling it in and hope for the best. And it seems to be that Max at the moment is better than anyone on those sort of tracks. And it feels, yeah, as the other guy said, it feels just the perfect storm.
Don't talk about storms again, all right? That we've already just had a moan about all of that. And it does rain sometimes in Japan, you, and it does rain sometimes. Yeah, I mean, it's as I say, it's been done and dusted. We've spoken on this podcast, it's been done and dusted for a long period of time, but it is interesting how it does at least fall into place. If Verstappen perhaps had finished a slightly higher, further up the ranking order on Sunday, would have made life a little bit easier. But as Ewan says, I think you can tell it's going to perhaps be a Max Verstappen weekend and a Red Bull weekend next weekend. Any notes on McLaren? It was a great weekend for them as well, very briefly. I mean, fantastic job for Lando Norris and Danny Ricciardo.
Yeah, they timed it well with going on to slicks, really. That was what it all came down to, especially with Ricciardo. Norris was always racing for fourth, sort of there or thereabouts, with Lewis, with Max at various points. But to get Ricciardo up there, he said he had to resist sort of his desperation. He wanted the hero moment of being that first driver onto slicks. But he resisted that and resisted, and then eventually the safety car came out and he went, well, right, there we go, and suddenly he was in fifth. And it's his first fifth place or top five finish since Saudi Arabia last year, which is scarcely believable. It's a brilliant weekend all round for McLaren, and also actually for Aston Martin, who catapulted themselves up in the Constructors' Championship with only their second double points score of the season. Lance Stroll 6th, his best result of the year as well.
Yeah, brilliant from McLaren. An absolutely perfect weekend. Both Alpines retiring. Mm. Both of their guys in the points and high scoring points as well. So from an 18-point disadvantage going into the race behind Alpine in the battle for 4th in the Constructors' Championship, they've now got a 4-point cushion. So that one looks like it's going to go down to the wire in Abu Dhabi. So at least something will go down to the wire in Abu Dhabi, at least.
just on teams doing well and not well, horrific for AlphaTauri going down to 9th as well. Especially after all the promise they had last year. You know, Gasly was meant to be proving himself this season, has taken another step, putting himself in the Red Bull frame. Obviously, Perez took the contract, and now Gasly, you know, is he not going to Alpine, but hasn't really taken a step forward, if anything, maybe a step backwards. The team look as if they've taken a step backwards, and Yuki's starting to struggle, and again, another mistake. Not good for that team, I don't think.
Ian, you've forewarned me about maybe what we can and can't say about other areas of discussion in Formula One that were taking place around the Singapore Grand Prix. The accusations of a breach of the budget cap last year, it was the Gazzetta dello Sport that said three teams, the Italian newspaper said three teams had gone over the budget cap last year. They claimed it was Red Bull, Aston Martin and one other, which I haven't seen yet on GP Fans if anybody is indicating who that third team might be. That has caused a lot of discussion, a lot of accusations of legal challenges as well. Can I say any more than that?
And it was the German publication Auto, Motor and Sport that cited Red Bull as being, I think, $9 million over and Aston Martin under the 5% cut. So it's a tricky one. Obviously, Toto Wolff certainly had a lot to say about it, and he could find himself in legal trouble with Red Bull if Christian Horner carries out his threat to effectively sue. He didn't actually come out and state that, but he did say that as a team they would see what options were open to them. So you don't have to read too much into that to suggest that they might yet go after him. because as Christian has rightly pointed out, where has this information come from? Where has Toto Wolff obtained his information? Now, as we know, within the FIA, there is a certain former employee of Mercedes who was very close to Toto Wolff, who is now in a position of power within the FIA. Did the information come from that person, as has been influenced by a certain Ralf Schumacher in an interview he did with a German TV station? So it's until Wednesday, and we are led to believe, every indication suggests, that on Wednesday the FIA will issue its certificates of compliance. These certificates basically are handed to the teams to confirm, effectively, well done, you operated in 2021 below the $145 million cap. So until we get official confirmation from the FIA, we do not know categorically whether any team breached the budget cap last season, and if they did breach the budget cap, by how much? Because obviously there are two levels of breach. I'll just quickly go through this for the people listening and watching. Two levels of breach. You can have a minor breach, which is below 5% of the cap, which is spending $7.5 million or less over the cap, or you can have a material breach, which is above that $7.5 million. And there are various punishments open to the FIA, some of which have been widely reported, are a deduction of last year's championship points, or even going so far as to, if it is Red Bull, strip Max Verstappen of his driver's title. I'd be very surprised if Red Bull has breached the cap by an excessive amount that the FIA would dare deduct enough points or go so far as to strip Max of last year's driver's title. There you go.
With the punishments that were available, it's important to note the FIA deliberately did not set what the punishments could be for. If you breach by less than the 5% cap, then they didn't want to say, for example, it will be a $10 million fine, because a top team with a higher budget may then go, well, we can afford that. We would have spent that anyway, so we'll do that. They did not want that situation to occur, and it will be interesting to see how they clamp down on this, because this will set a precedent, especially, and no matter what team it is, may not be. Last year, teams were developing cars for last year and this year. It's possible, I don't know how they do this, but it's possible they would be able to say, well, this money was spent on this car, this money was spent on that car. Because you can guarantee, if it is a top team that's done it, rivals will turn around and go, but you've gained an advantage, or a lasting advantage. And that's where this will get incredibly messy.
So it's a critical few days, I think, for the FIA and for F1, because, especially for the FIA, because if there's been a breach, as Ian pointed out, where has the info come from for the other teams? Because it is a confidential process. So that'll be the first thing I think I'll get in hot water with, because obviously if there's been a breach and that information is right, then there's been a leak. First point. Second point, if there's been a breach, let's not pretend that Red Bull are stupid. They're not. It's an audit process where clarifications are sought between both parties. So have the FIA provided Red Bull, again, if there's been a breach, have the FIA provided Red Bull with misleading information, which has led to the the wrong number basically being submitted, and therefore the breach. And yeah, you know, they spent so long going through these financial regulations, so long laying the groundwork, so long trying to create these regulations to make a more level playing field in F1, to close a gap between the might of the manufacturers and the smaller independent teams. And it could come crashing down depending on how this goes on Wednesday. And that is everything from how that information was leaked to potential punishments if there is a breach. And as you rightly said, there is another team involved in that as well. So it's not just Red Bull. It's not like all focus on one thing. It just, for the whole of F1, for the whole of the FIA, with the importance of these financial regulations, it's massive. And it could rumble on for a long time.
There is a very obvious punishment that the FIA has at its disposal, which is one that would not, they would not be criticised too much for if they did impose it, if a team is found to have exceeded the cap, and that is stripping a team of some of its wind tunnel time. It's not a financial penalty because, as Sam has pointed out, any team, if they wanted, could think, okay, if that's the penalty, I'm going to do that next season, I'm going to cop a fine, we can afford that, no problem. Stripping of points, world titles, it's excessive, and it would take a very, very brave FIA to do it. So the obvious sanction, as I say, is stripping a team of wind tunnel time, because that impacts heavily on the development of next year's car in particular.
And the other thing, the problem that a fine, a financial penalty brings, is that again that creates a wider gap between the big teams and the small teams, because Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull, Aston Martin, maybe McLaren, maybe not yet, but maybe in a few years' time, will be in a position where they can go, do you know what, we'll spend the extra 5 million, 6 million, 7 million, because we know we're going to get however much of a fine we can afford to pay that. Haas, Alfa Romeo, Williams can't do that. They don't operate at the cap level anyway. So, or, you know, you're just widening the margin in, again, and then making a mockery of these rules, like I said, that took so long to formulate.
Michael Massey will be happy at least. I mean, it takes some pressure off him after last year. It suddenly makes the ending of last season pale in insignificance. We'll see what happens over the next few days. These three fine gentlemen will have their ears to the ground, and I'm sure Ewan still will when he's on the flight on the way back from Singapore this week to find out exactly what happens on Wednesday if the FIA give us the information that we so desire here at GP Fans. And you'll find it on GP Fans Global on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok, and of course on the website gpfans.com. Ian, Sam, pleasure as always to break down the F1 weekend with you. Ewan, fantastic backdrop, really got the sense of the bright lights of Singapore. Yeah. Much appreciated.
Yeah. And,
safe travels, everyone. Thanks for joining us on the podcast as always. And we'll be back after Japan, where maybe we'll be crowning a one or two time world champion, Max Verstappen. We'll see what happens in the next few days.